good evening, and welcome to Direct Line with Wayne Kent. Direct Line, religious topics without the preaching, mixing politics and religion, and not shying away from controversy. You're not going to find all your answers, but you will always find an opinion. This is Direct Line, and now your host, Wayne Kent.
Welcome back, friends. It really is a good time to have you with us here on News Talk 1340 WSOY. You know, Josh, I got to go be at St. Patrick's School today, and the awards and the checks were given out from the food drive from the station. And I don't want to steal thunder from what will be announced tomorrow, but it was a really cool day.
Awesome.
I saw hundreds of thousands of dollars given away today.
That's really cool.
From our community to our community.
That's cool.
You may recall that we had 1.3 million pounds or dollars, depending on which side, but we counted it all pounds, raised in 12 hours in a town of 100,000 people.
That's crazy.
Great stuff.
That's cool.
Great stuff. And it was all given away today, so it's very good. I got to be there and watch the whole thing happen. You should have seen. And then it was all in front of an audience of school kids, which is really cool to teach the school kids. This is what we do as a people called Decaturites, and this is how we care for people who are...
And they were probably just blown away by the amount of money, too.
Well, but, you know.
Their reaction.
As a fifth grader, understand $140,000.
They know it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, you buy a lot of Mars bars.
Yeah, you could.
A lot of Pokemon cards or whatever. The kids still play Pokemon?
It's coming back a little bit.
Is it?
It's now the McDonald's toy.
Ah, okay.
So, and they give a card away.
All right.
I just know that because I have kids and I frequent McDonald's.
There you go. So. All right. See, I don't have any. Well, I have kids, but.
You're not buying Happy Meals, though.
Not usually, no. Not usually. So, how long have you been in pastoral ministry, Josh?
I've been at Decatur for 4 years. I was somewhere else for 3 years. So, about 7 years now.
7 years. Okay. And
yeah.
I've been in pastoral ministry since 1985, 30 years. And during that period of time, probably both of us, though they're completely different lengths of time, we've seen so-called preachers or pastors or those in ministry step into, in our circles, it's called moral failure.
Yep.
And it usually means that they've had some sort of sexual misconduct. And the pretty swift response from churches is you're out the door.
Yes.
And that creates a problem for people who might be in the middle of an affair or who are involved in some sexual activity that is not becoming, if you will, of their profession, namely, or our profession. And I'm aware that many of our audience are secular. They're not involved in churches, but nonetheless, the sense is within, if you're unfamiliar with it, ladies and gentlemen, is that within a church, if you are leading a church, there is some sense when it comes to sexual activity. It's within the confines of a heterosexual marriage, for the most part. It would be the way most churches would respond. And that it is above board and everything's okay. But the statistics would prove otherwise. A recent survey conducted by Barna Research on behalf of Proven Men Ministries indicated that approximately two-thirds of U.S. men view pornography at least monthly. Among clergy, a 2009 study conducted by the Texas Tech University 460 male pastors or ministers revealed that over 20% access pornography at least twice monthly. Does that surprise you?
20%?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to be, I mean, working as a student pastor with a lot of student. I mean, it's hard to be surprised by anything. But of leaders, that's not a good number.
That's not a good number. And part of the problem is amongst churches, if you're discovered or if you come forward, usually it often means your job. And so men, if I could speak on behalf of men, are usually reluctant to bring this matter to their peers or to their friends or to their bosses and say, I want to fix this, because it's invariably tied to their profession and to their ability to care for their family.
Yeah.
Well, Michael Todd Wilson is a licensed professional counselor and board-certified coach with Intentional Hearts and co-founder of Shepherd Care. Is the author or co-author of some books called Soul Virgins, Redefining Single Sexuality, along with another book, Preventing Ministry Failure. Kind of an expert on this whole area. And, Michael, we're very glad to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us here on Direct Line.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And, MT, I'm aware that you've written this book called Unburdened, The Christian Leader's Path to Sexual Integrity, but the primary focus of it is to try and help those of us who are in clergy or in ministry settings find a way to say, hey, this is where I have permission to acknowledge that I've got a problem.
That's right. Increasingly, and I'm thankful for this, there have been books that have come out over the last, you know, decade or so addressing sexual integrity, sexual addiction, things like that. Not many of those are targeted to the Christian leader. And so part of my intent for writing the book is to try to fill that space with something that was a little more targeted for the guy who's the Christian leader. And of course, when we talk about Christian leadership, we're generally thinking about, as you said earlier, pastors and nonprofit leaders. But in a sense, Christian leader also can expand to other things like elders and deacons and even fathers and husbands at some level are Christian leaders. So, I mean, it does apply to everybody, but I tried to target it specifically to the guy who's more in de facto Christian leadership.
Okay, so we're having an assumption here that you and I are in agreement, and maybe not all of our audience is in agreement, that pornography is something that Christian leaders should shy away from. We're in agreement.
Correct.
Right.
That's right. That's right.
Not all of our audience would agree with that, but with that as a premise, why is it then that those in Christian leadership who are supposed to be shying away from pornography, what's driving them back to that? What's driving men back to that area of life that's so private and so whatever, hidden, being aware that this is a standard that they're pushing against a standard they should be adhering to?
Well, I think there's lots of reasons. I think men in general and Christian leaders in specific are being driven to it more simply because of easier access. I mean, it used to be that a few decades ago you had to go to a pretty seedy side of town to access pornography, and then it became available in video stores, and then it became available, you know, in the newsstands, and then it's available on the computer. And so it's just becoming more and more easily accessible and done in secrecy. So, I mean, I have a theory that of all the kinds of compulsive, addictive, sinful things that ministers or Christian leaders can get involved in, pornography and other related sexual indiscretions, actually there may be a higher incidence of those things than in the general population, simply because of, I mean, you think about the unique features of a Christian leader. He is at the top. Not many people know what he does behind his closed door when he's preparing for a sermon or visiting the sick or doing whatever he says he's doing. There's just a lot of opportunity to have private time out and about or with one's computer, and of course now it's so easily accessible with a tablet or a phone, that it just is a simple click away from access to whatever it is that you want, everything from pornography to hook up with a person to a prostitute or anything else.
You say, I see where somebody asked you recently, what made you realize there was a need for this book like Unburdened? And you said there still seems to be some measure of taboo around giving permission to Christian leaders to discuss this issue.
Yes, and part of it is what you said, is that the Christian leader is in a unique place that he realizes that his livelihood and his ability to provide for his family may be connected to, you know, how other people see he's doing. And so if he discloses a struggle with this kind of thing, if the default answer, which oftentimes is true, is that you're out the door, then there's a reluctance to be able to own that. And so because I do a lot of coaching with Christian men and leaders in specific on sexual integrity issues, I oftentimes end up being the first and only person that guy has ever told about his struggle because of the reasons that you said. If I tell my senior pastor, I'm going to get fired. If I tell somebody in my ministry, it's going to get leaked out. If I tell, you know, somebody in another denomination, then that's a problem. If I tell my spouse, then, but so they go down the line and they nix everybody out of their life that could potentially be a lifeline, and then they're left with no one. And so that's part of the benefit of what I do for guys. Of course, part of what I do also, in addition to giving them a safe space to talk about it, is to try to help them figure out who's the next person they can be told, because we need a team to be able to figure out what the steps are, you know, down the pathway to getting back on the road to integrity.
Do you think that a greater, this is Josh, by the way.
Do you think
that a greater problem is that in ministry settings, there's not a lot of room or frequent pattern of confession, just confession of any sin?
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. I'm sure now some denominations do a little better than others on that, but you're right. There isn't a lot of space because there's a great pressure to appear perfect, And, of course, everybody knows that Christian leaders aren't. But it's we don't give practical, we may give lip service to it, but we don't give practical space to be able to own weakness, to be able to own a struggle, and to be able to have a path to get back on the road when there has been a mistake that's made, regardless of whether it's in the sexual arena or some other place. And that's, I think that's, Wayne, that's back to what you said earlier, which is it's a little risky to give a Christian leader grace. I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but to offer grace means we have to admit that they're not perfect, and we have to admit that they make mistakes, and we've got to give them some kind of a space to be able to either self-correct or to have a mechanism to help them get back on the pathway. Now, we would all agree that certain sins, there needs to be, you know, a sabbatical or a stepping aside from ministry or maybe getting out of ministry altogether. I'm not arguing that. But there has to be a level of some safe place that they can go to say, look, this is what's going on with me. I need help. And we've got to be able to enter into their space with compassion, with grace, and give them some kind of mechanism to be able to be restored.
The dilemma I would say in that regard, though, MT, is that I'm not aware of many churches that have that space. I'm working in, speaking of church settings.
Sure. Yeah, which is unfortunately the reason that I exist. I mean, in terms of what I offer. Because I end up, for many guys, being the only safe space that they know of. Let's just take it out of Christian ministry for a minute, though. I mean, any guy who's dealing with a life-dominating issue oftentimes does not feel the freedom, unfortunately, to go within his church and to own whatever his compulsive addictive hang-up is.
I find that extremely sad and frustrating, and no matter what I say from the pulpit, I'm aware that people go, I can't tell you that. We had a case just this week, someone who said, well, if I'd known you were who you were in the life of the church, I wouldn't have told you what's going on, because they're just, shame is a horrible thing, and particularly when they think they're being shamed in front of the clergy.
Yes.
Not that
And that's part of where Celebrate Recovery and the 12-step groups and things like that, that's part of why those groups exist and I think have some viability for people to go to. But I don't think it's the place where they land forever. I think it's the place where they may enter in order to be able to be heard and get on the pathway and to try to direct them back to getting what they need from the church. Because in a perfect world, which of course we don't live in, but in a perfect world, the church would be able to provide the space for all of that to the point where I wouldn't even need to exist.
Michael Todd, we have a fairly large church, and I think in terms of male men on staff who work for us full-time, probably 15 maybe. Josh, would that be?
Yeah, I'd say that's about right.
Yeah, we have a lot of people on staff, and probably 15 of them would be men who work for us full-time. And I have said to... in group settings, hey guys, if you got an issue, come to me, please. And I can't promise you that it's not your job, but I'd rather us get you whole and healthy. My hunch is, if there's 15 of them, some of us have a problem, but I've never heard from them. Am I out to lunch on that?
I mean, if obviously special cases always, could be different, but statistically speaking, I would be surprised if a few of them did not at least have this issue. Whether it's two-thirds, I mean, I think some other statistics say that may be a little high, but it's still a big number, whatever it is.
What would you say?
Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm the lead pastor. What kind of model do you have for me that I could help the men in my staff?
Well, a couple thoughts. First of all, I would say what you've already done is a good first step. You need to use words to give them permission to come to you.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is, if somebody does come to you, you have to be willing to give them some grace and not the very first thing not be that they be fired. I do understand, though, that depending on what's disclosed, that may have to be the case. But I like your heart in what you express, which is, I want to try to help you. And I want to use the least restrictive means to be able to help you. So, providing them, space to be able to talk about what is going on honestly, to provide them some kind of a restoration path, maybe some kind of formal group that helps to shepherd them back on the right path, depending on how far off the path they've gone. Obviously, if it's further down the path, then, you know, you may need to offer them a severance package in order to be able to provide for their family and receive counseling or coaching or whatever services they need in order to be made whole so that they can transition back into ministry, or if it's not appropriate, transition into some kind of secular employment. I think we just have to stop and say, okay, we brought these guys on and we told them we were going to take care of them, but we do have a relationship. And so if something happens under our care, we need to make sure that we take care of them, either by giving them the resources they need to be restored while still being in ministry, giving them the resources they need while they're on sabbatical from our ministry with a reevaluation later, or to take care of them for a season of time while they get whole so they can transition onto the next thing, because it's not just about the guy. It's about his family, it's about his kids, and it's about the story that we're telling of grace to everybody who's going to watch it play out in real time, not just in your church, but also in the community.
Do you have a model where you're working with, say, the whole male staff group of a congregation? I'm just thinking outside the box right now. What if is there an option, say, for a congregation like ours, because we got people who do attend church or in our audience, who a congregation like ours or another one in the city could contract with you and say, okay, so all the men on staff are going to have a conversation with you on the phone once a month.
Absolutely. And another alternative, which I'm actually working with the church to negotiate this right now, is actually a periodic time for going through the book that I wrote, Unburdened, you know, yeah. The Christian Leader's Path to Sexual Integrity. Part of it is the educational piece. Part of it is leading a group conversation at a, you know, just below the surface level amongst the male leadership. And then interspersed among that is some one-on-one time to be able to have confidential conversations. So, yeah, there's different ways that could be applied. You could do it in a retreat setting. A lot of churches will do a once-a-year retreat. The retreat, you know, there could be a separate thing for the men and the women, and the time for the men is to specifically address sexual integrity from one vantage point, and for the women it would be addressed from another vantage point. So there's different models that could be applied.
How did you get in this ministry?
Well, I mean, I'm a counselor by training, so I have about 17, 18 years of counseling as a counselor in Florida and Georgia. And so I just started out. In fact, when I went to graduate school, the only thing I knew that I wanted to do when I got out was, A, help people in a way that really made a difference, and I wanted to use a counseling model to do that. And, B, I had a real soft spot for guys in ministry. And part of that is because my grandfather on my mother's side was a bivocational music minister all his life. And I saw what his life was like, and I respected him for it. And so I've always seen myself as somebody who is in ministry, even though I've never been a pastor.
Right.
That's what I do is clearly ministry. And so long story short, you know, I got my training and my experience and my licenses. And as I started thinking about where to specialize in my counseling work, it became pretty apparent that the sexual piece was something that was missing in the church and that I needed to have specific advanced training in order to be able to say, look, I'm theologically sound in my approach, and I also have certifications that allow me to be able to speak directly to the issue of sexuality. And so, you know, that coupled just with my own normal guy struggle stuff with sexuality as a single guy who didn't get married till he's almost 39, you know, that's just how I kind of God brought me into this arena. And so working with guys in ministry and working with sexual integrity, it was just a natural merging of two pathways.
What about Michael Todd? What about those who are listening say, oh, it's only pornography, it's not a big deal, get over it?
Well, first of all, the first thing I would say is tell your wife that.
yeah.
You know, just you can have your own opinion, but she's certainly got hers, and chances are it's not that permissive. So that would be one thing. I try to be practical, right? So, you know, that's one. Second of all is, you know, God's word is pretty clear about lust, you know, and even the 12 steps says it's not about pornography. It's the fact that we're powerless over lust and our lives have become unmanageable. So it's not what's on the outside. It's about what's on the inside that's the problem. And so it's not just about pornography. I mean, pornography could be about, you know, watching the woman walk down the beach or watching the woman who's fully clothed jogging down the street. or thinking about the old girlfriend from 20 years ago in a way that is sexual in nature. So, I mean, pornography is sort of in the eye of the beholder. But think of it this way. My spouse, because I said I do, and we could talk about how this applies to the single guy in theory, but for the guy who's married, when we said I do, 1 Corinthians 7 comes into play. And 1 Corinthians 7 says my body doesn't belong to me, it belongs to her. And what I do with it is not just my decision. My eyes are obviously a part of my body. So what I do with my eyes has to be surrendered not only to God, but also to her. And so when I give a part of my heart and a part of my soul to a woman in porneia, okay, sexual indiscretion, sexual indiscretion, then I am becoming one with that other woman. Yes, it's not physical flesh on flesh, but it's virtual, and it's a part of my heart in lust nonetheless. Does that make sense?
Yep, sure does. Sure does. Just wanted to hear you say it for me. You know, the old rule, an expert coming with a briefcase is always more powerful than me saying it. There you go. You're the expert with the briefcase.
Let me say one other thing, too, that's sort of related. There's a difference between impulse and action.
Right.
And I work with a lot of guys that when they feel the impulse, they feel this intense shame that comes alongside that. And that's satanic. That's not the Holy Spirit. That's not God. Because the Bible talks about, in James, you know, it says, when sin is conceived, it gives birth to sin. Or when lust is conceived, when desire is conceived, it gives birth to sin. And so the desire is not sin. That impulse, we could also label it a temptation. We could label it an impulse, and there's lots of things we could call it, depending on if you want to use Christian language or not. That impulse is a part of being a fallen man in a fallen world and being subject to temptation. But as soon as that impulse happens, which I'm not responsible for the impulse, but as soon as that happens, what I do with it in my mind and subsequently with my body matters. The Bible presumes that we're going to struggle. The Bible presumes there's also an antidote to surrendering that struggle to the Lord and not engaging it.
Right, exactly. Well, if people want to get a hold of the book, Unburdened, The Christian Leader's Path to Sexual Integrity, how can they do that?
Well, it's through InterVarsity Press, so they could pick it up anywhere, online retailer, Barnes & Noble, physical bookstore, family bookstores, wherever you get your books from, you can get it. And on my website, for people who sign up for my blogs, there's also a study guide that goes with it. So that's a downloadable thing. It's certainly suitable for going through with a group of guys. My heart is that I know what people are going to do. My heart is that people look at this, you know, with a buddy or with a group of guys or something like that, but there's still benefit to going through it on your own. But the study guide is there for anybody who wants that as an added benefit.
How to get a hold of you on your website?
Yep, MichaelToddWilson.com. Easiest way to get there. All the information about me and what I do is there.
Michael Todd Wilson. Three names. You got it. Michael Todd Wilson. Hey, Michael Todd Wilson, thanks for being with us today and your book, Unburdened, The Christian Leader's Path to Sexual Integrity. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Wayne.
All right. With that, we're taking a break. You're listening to News Talk 1340 WSOI.